This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. I'm Ben Eshmade, and this week we're blasting back through space and time to hear from DJ and producer Jeff Mills, talking about the orbit of his career so far.
Trying to imagine that our reality is just a fraction, a very small sliver of something much larger. That actually everything that we've ever known and everything that we will ever know is perhaps maybe a reflection of something else.
Jeff Mills has been pushing and pulling at the boundaries of techno ever since he first lit up the Detroit airwaves with his DJ mixes as The Wizard. He takes up the story.
The Wizard on 98 WJLB Detroit.
Who dares disturb the mighty wizard?
All right, let's get back to business.
Before I had made it to radio, I mean, I was a pretty active in the streets of Detroit, you know, the late 70s and the early 80s. You know, to do that, you know, one had to be very creative and very consistent, very impactful, because there were many, many, many DJs trying to do the same thing. This idea of being able to do something with music, to get a reaction, is something that I learned at a very, very early age. So I've kind of carried it with me throughout my whole career, you know, even from house music in the 80s and, you know, techno in the 90s and classical music and things like that. So it's really become a tool, basically.
We begin in 2015 when the artist came to London to present his then new project Light from the Outside World, an ambitious techno meets orchestra experiment. You would have heard Mills' electronic map of sounds and shapes, reimagined with layers of strings, brass, and the percussion of the BBC Symphony Orchestra, enhancing the harmonic layers in the original electronic compositions. These new arrangements casted classics like The Bells in a totally new light. Now based in Europe, he spoke to me about where his love of the orchestra came from in the first place.
My influence mainly comes from, it comes from science fiction, actually. I as a kid, every week we were at the movie theater. And then as you get older, you become a little bit more aware of, the film and the meaning of the film and the soundtrack, was always something that we really began to pay more attention to. And who made it, and who did the arrangements and things like that. And so I kind of learned classical music actually through film, actually.
I'm interested to know. I mean, were there sort of early soundtracks that you distinctly remember?
I mean, as a young kid, Star Wars was above all the top, film, and then also the soundtrack with John Williams. I found out later how much of his work actually, for many, many, for as long as I can remember, from TV shows to commercials to other films. Well, I realized that I had always had this connection since I was very, very, very young, because I knew all these themes, so So Star Wars really wasn't my first contact with, you know, with John Williams and his work. But, you know, Jerry Goldsmith also, you know, was very, very active in the 70s and the 80s in, you know, science fiction, and then later Hans Zimmer. And then as I got, you know, even older, in my mid-20s, I got into Gregory Leggett, and, you know, through films and more mature type of composition work, I guess. And kind of progress along.
How do you think it affected your work? I mean, maybe from what you're saying, the sense of melody was always there, or maybe the thicker orchestral textures?
Well, like very early in my career, I always made compositions that kind of lean more towards orchestration. But these weren't the compositions that I'm best known for. It's more club music, you know. But since the late 80s to early 90s, I had always had a certain amount of compositions that were kind of, you know, I was kind of wishful thinking, you know, that perhaps maybe I could compose this track to the point that people would not think that it's electronic music, but actually classical. I kind of done it, you know, time and time, over and over again for years and years and years. And then when I was asked to put together a collection of my work that could be translated for orchestra, I had a good number of compositions that I thought that would be perfect for that type of arrangements and translation.
What are the challenges of translating the music?
Well, translating the definition of funk is very hard to do. It's very hard to explain to an orchestra. you know, depending on the conductor, if the conductor is, you know, has some jazz background or something, or I guess that might be the elements in electronic music. You know, we use funk as sometimes an underlining character in the music, you know, because we have to deal with the physicality of the music. So wanting to translate not just the composition, but also the way the composition feels to the listener is something that's really hard to do. The objective is basically the same. You know, you're trying to explain something through sound, through chords, through harmonics and things like that. Trying to explain something that is not in the classical vocabulary, I think, is interesting. Yeah.
Do you get involved in the nitty gritty? Do you say things like more timpanis, more bassoon? Give me double basses.
Yeah. I mean, I can explain to the arranger, you know, my original composition and why it was made and what the sounds mean. That's which is really important. So what is the conversation? Is it between two and three voices, or, you know, is it just one solo voice? The more that I explain to the arranger, the more he has a better idea of how to create something that's close to the original. So, of course, yeah, I can say, you know, this composition, the strings, you know, were more prominent than, say, any other sound. So then, you know, the arrangement can be that, or I say, you know, the composition was really designed for the listener to feel as if they are by themselves. So then a lone instrument, maybe clarinet or, you know, the tuba or something like that, you know, is applied in that position. You know, again, communicating is not a problem, you know, that I've run into yet. Thank you. When I'm performing, I'm actually inside of the body of the orchestra, which means that what I hear isn't exactly what the audience hears. I'm generally closer to the double bass and to the cellos. So what I hear more prominently are the sounds of those instruments. And even though, you know, what I'm playing and what I'm doing is coming out very balanced and very even for the audience, but I feel that I'm actually part of a larger machine. That's, you know, from my ears and what I'm doing and where I am positioned on the stage, that's kind of how it feels. So it's quite different from being in the studio and being over equipment and having complete control and balance, and I can listen to it from a distance and things. It's a bit different. You know, you're kind of like inside the machine, basically. That's the feeling. And so the compositions were selected based on this idea about our surrounding. And so so the compositions were, I kind of compiled them to kind of show the different textures, I suppose, of the way that we live as a human species. So some are very aggressive, some are very experimental, some are very charming, some are very, very mysterious. Some feel very comfortable, some feel very strange. Just trying to look at the human emotion and trying to attack it from many, many different directions is how I came to the track list.
Four men and a beautiful girl, off on a fantastic voyage, actually entering inside the human body, exploring an unknown universe, unknown dangers.
You know, the title actually comes from a film. It comes from the science fiction film Fantastic Voyage. And this film was released in 1965. It's this film where this team of scientists and doctors and were shrunk down to microscopic size and then injected into the body of this dying person, to go into the body and travel through the body up to the brain to kill the cancer with laser beams. And part of the story, they're traveling to the brain and they pass the ear. And so they're in this tiny little craft. One of the actors points to this light that's coming from the outside, and she goes, you know, what is this light? And the other character replies back to her that, you know, that's the light from the outside world. She she looks at him in a very curious way, but it made me think that perhaps the reality that we live in is something like that. That maybe what we see, maybe all the colors, all the shapes, all the reality, all the memories, everything, is really a reflection or the light from something else. So there's a long explanation of where the theme and the story comes from.
Have you enjoyed the translation from the clubs to the concert hall? Has that been an interesting sort of journey?
Yes, I have. I mean, it's nice because it's the most formal thing that you're ever going to do, you know, so tuxedos, and it's just really nice to be involved in something that's so organized. And I mean, I've done the most unconstructed type of things that one could imagine from being a DJ. So it's, in contrast to that, to be able to manage both at the same time is very nice, you know. So having to perform earlier in the evening is great, because on the next night I have to play till 6 o'clock in the morning. So it's nice to have a variety, and I would recommend it for any other DJ or electronic musician to find something else to hold and to have in contrast to what you normally do. And then I think it makes DJing and producing music even more enjoyable, actually.
Your career has been incredible, you know, from Detroit and through to the modern day. I mean, what have you learned? I mean, what lessons, you know, you come to?
I've learned the reality of the way things are, you know, that we got here by making mistakes, you know, and if we don't make the mistakes, we won't learn as much. So exploring new things, not worrying about whether you're going to be loved or liked, or, you know, whether you're going to get a good grade, or maybe the best education for whatever you do is to try something. And if you're lucky, you know, you may fail at that. And if you fail from that, then, you know what not to do the next time. You know, on the other side of the coin, if you are successful, then you don't really know what failure is really like. So the more, you know, the more a person tries to try new things, the more that, and if they're unsuccessful, the more they're going to learn about and narrow down which things will bring more success or more deeper success. So that's been pretty much my agenda for the past 15, 20 years is to try to explore as much as I possibly can with this music, because I'm learning so many things in the process. And maybe all these things will lead to something else, maybe not even musical. I'm learning a tremendous amount of things by doing things that I'm not familiar with.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So he performed Light from the Outside World to a rapturous reception at the Barbican in October 2015, accompanied, of course, by the BBC Symphony Orchestra with conductor Christoph Mangau. Let's time jump now 2 years to June 2017, when he presented a series of events entitled From Here to There, incorporating music, dance and film. This was also part of a bigger science fiction series called Into the Unknown, which ran across the Barbican Centre that year. He even returned to once again expand the original Light from the Outside World performance to include a new arrangement, Utopia. Let's learn about that first.
Over time, I realized that, you know, I really have to get this track arranged, and I was insistent on putting this one in. I think it's one of the most interesting tracks in the whole performance. It speaks to a subject that relates to any and every living thing, basically, you know. And it's story form type of way, so it starts off very dark, and then it gets very mysterious, and then it gets really aggressive, and then it's very calm, like it's arrived at somewhere, you know, from all that energy and all that activities.
So let us hear more about From Here to There as we continue our fantastic voyage with this artist. I started by asking about the themes and ideas of the residency and the early conversations with the programming team at the Barbican.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was informed that the residency will kind of fall in a time of a larger science fiction fair, and it was pretty much up to me to decide the contents of the residency and how I would tie them together. So I thought that maybe I need to have a general theme, and that theme dresses it in different perspectives for each night of the residency. And so I thought that a lot of science fiction subjects and stories, you know, they tend to take place about time. So time travel, or the time that it takes to get here, or looking at time in a completely different way, and these type of what if type of scenarios. So I thought that time, the subject of time, would be the main subject. And then it would be approached in four different ways. So Fantastic Voyage is a race against time. There is the main character in the film is dying from a violent attack, and these characters need to shrink themselves to microscopic scale and insert themselves into his body to cure him from the inside, you know, and there's this race of time for that. Life to Death and Back is really about the 12 hours it takes for the god of Osiris to reincarnate you so that you can come back to Earth again and walk the planet, you know, so 12 hours there. Planets is a classical piece that is about planets, but it was made very much in reference to the time, and the time that it takes to get from one planet to the next is factored into the way that you listen to the performance and you listen to the concept. And then the last one, Light from the Outside World, referencing time, but it's using light as the element to measure that. It speaks to a time different from our own time or reality that we're in now. So those were the four perspectives of that subject that we'll address.
Let's start with the project Life to Death and Back. This project is a really interesting mix of live music, dance, and film.
It addresses what most ancient Egyptians practiced and what they lived their lives for was to basically live their life in the best possible way, 365 gods for each day of the year. Just about everything that they did was under the spirit of, or the almost in a way, the instructions of what a god of that day prescribed. And they did that all the way until the end of their life. And so this performance references just that. It starts with the point where they're reborn again, and they make their way down to Earth from the star that they traveled from. And then they walk the Earth and experience things, life. The viewer is watching film. They're experiencing different parts of the Egyptian wing of the Louvre. So there's three different periods where they go to, or three different parts of the museum that we film dance choreography in.
I wanted to ask about filming in the Louvre in Paris. That must have been an incredible experience.
Yeah. It was quite interesting. I mean, I was only given a window of about 8 hours a day for 2 days. So 16 hours. We had to film the whole entire thing on a Tuesday, which is the only day that the museum is closed. So we started quite early in the morning. And yeah, you can't sweep anything. You can't wipe anything. Even the dust on the floor, you have to call someone in order to be able to do that. You can't move anything around. You can't move a trash can around. You can't lean on anything. You can't touch hardly anything. It required a lot of discussion, a lot of thought, a lot of me going back to the museum, taking measurements, looking at the lighting, looking at the just a whole huge outline of points that I needed to do before even getting to the part of the choreography and the dancing and what the dancers, you know, would actually do, you know. So we did it. It's very beautiful film and performance. And yeah, it really required a lot of work.
So, moving to Fantastic Voyage, you've rescored an incredible amount of films now. What do you look for in a film to make you want to create your own soundtrack?
Well first, the film has to be enjoyable. The cinematography helps greatly. So working on a Fritz Lang film, it's like paradise, because, there's so much that I can use in order to be able to address that with sound. The movement of the characters, this is really the work of the director. I can really tell whether the director was really conscious of detail of movement and placement. The scene just doesn't have characters, but it also has a different layers of ways of communicating to the viewer. And so I'm generally looking at what I can kind of latch on to, things that would give me indications of the tempo. For instance, if the scene is consisting of multiple characters, I know that I can use more voices sometimes to address each one of those characters, or just make it a sixth character that's there. Some sound that doesn't have the character of any of those people. Yeah, just a variety of things that I'm generally looking for in order to be able to apply the music.
And with a score such as this, is there a certain amount of improvisation? How much do you have planned in advance?
Well, what I do in to get ready for a Cinemix, I make the music for the segment of the film, but then I apply it manually in by hand in real time. I'm mixing the music, so I can modify it and extend things and shorten things and change things around in real time while the film is running. Or I can improvise on certain things in the music that I made, or I can just change it completely. So that's what kind of makes it closer to the way films were addressed back in the 20th century, where a group of musicians would play the soundtrack as you watch the film. It's pretty much the same thing.
We move to the return of the Project Light from the outside world. I wanted to start by asking whether you remember fondly the 2015 performance at the Barbican.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's been actually one of the highlights of my whole classical, electronic performance career so far. I mean, that show was just incredible. The reaction of the people and the reaction of the musicians. So it's something that it's a show that we talk about all the time, and actually we use it as a measurement for a lot of other shows. The London shows is what we call it. We're constantly modifying it, changing it, because we are taking from things that we experience from one performance to the next, and we can see, that certain things could be better. For instance, in the track of Amazon, we've modified the solo part between me and the percussion a few times. We now understand that part needs to be longer. It needs to allow time for me to be able to really play the drum machine and do whatever I want to do and break away from the orchestra. And it's also a time for the percussion part of the orchestra to just improvise and just play what they feel. Some of the magic of this performance kind of rolls out. The bells is always changing because of what I'm doing on the drum machine while the orchestra is playing the part. So I'm always trying to find ways to make new versions of it. So different drum patterns, different breaks, different things that I'm adding all the time. And then I'm also, in more of the experimental parts like medium C and other things, I'm always trying bringing in new pieces of equipment. Yeah, so we'll be doing the same for this London show. So
okay, we've reached finally Planets. This new work seems like a logical development of the ideas and themes from Light from the Outside World.
Yeah, I mean, what I wanted to do was to at least a step forward and to improve the idea and really show that a collaboration between two genres can really be almost seamless, It can be in a way that it becomes difficult to distinguish between who's playing what, that the listener just begins to just listen to the music as it is. And so I thought that planets should be at least a new type of sound. So I started off from that, and the subject matter was the nine planets. And different from Hall, from Gustav Hall's, what he did 100 years ago with the planets, this version should be really based on a journey, because the idea of the journey to another planet or to something away from Earth will be more commonly explored in the decades and the centuries to come for humanity. Imagining 100 years from now, where humans will have been probably will somehow reflect what I was trying to say in this project. So using the force of the sun to propel ourselves towards the planet of Mercury, using the force and the rotation of Mercury to propel ourselves to Venus, and so on, all the way into Pluto. Exploring each type of planet, so rock planets versus gas planets. But then when we get to Jupiter and to Saturn and Uranus and Pluto, it becomes more mysterious, and so does the music. And so what I was doing was using what we generally know of each planet, what science data tells us about each planet, translate that into the original scores, and that's really what the performance is about.
Lastly, if someone did give you a ticket into space, say on one of those shuttle trips we see in the news, would you go?
Yeah, of course. If I could go tomorrow, I'd be packing my bags now. It takes a certain type of person to want to not go, to stay, to not be curious about what's out there. I think that takes a very special circumstance to not want to know what's up and beyond the stars, So, yeah, of course, yeah, I would be willing to go like right away.
Thanks to Jeff for speaking to us. I hope you enjoyed his words, music, and journey through time and space. I'm Ben Eshmade. Thanks for listening to this archive edition of Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast, a series that is about inspiring more people to discover and love the arts, with weekly episodes of archive finds and theme series. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.